You got us a job at Google?
Not a job. It's an interview for an internship that could lead to a job.
Welcome to the official Plugged In podcast. I'm Bob Smithhauser, and you just heard a clip from the new Vince Vaughn, Owen Wilson buddy comedy, The Internship. It's rated PG-13, but if the studio hopes to draw fans of that duo's raunchy hit Wedding Crashers, parents have to wonder how PG-13 it'll be. On hand to tell us is Plugged In senior associate editor Adam Holtz.
Hi, Bob.
Paul Acey is here as well. Hey, Paul.
Good one to be here.
Oh, that was very good. Of course, Paul runs the television section here at PluggedIn.com. And while summer isn't typically a big season for new shows, there is a program you thought we should know about.
Yeah, absolutely. That's right. It's a new sitcom on Fox called The Goodwin Games.
It centers on a family, and you're going to let us know if it's appropriate for families.
Yeah, if they're blind and deaf, perhaps. But otherwise, no, we have some nice things to say, too. So.
Well, a little later on, we have a surprise in store just in time for Father's Day. So thanks for being here. This week's podcast is sponsored by Cedarville University, celebrating 125 years of inspiring greatness. Cedarville University is a Christ-centered learning community recognized across the country for academic excellence. In fact, we have several graduates on staff right here at Focus on the Family. Fall classes will be starting before you know it. Learn how you can become part of their family at cedarville.edu.
And now, here's a little something we like to call Culture Clips.
Time for headlines, Adam.
Well, guys, Miley Cyrus is back in the news, and I wish I could say that was a good thing, but it's not. Miley's 20 now, and you would hope that maybe she was growing up a little bit, but we don't see much evidence of that on her latest single, We Can't Stop. And it's almost like she got a focus group together and said, what are all of the bad things we could put in this song? There's drinking, there's casual sex, there's cocaine use in the bathroom, there's taking ecstasy. And then at the end of it, she basically says, and don't even worry about, you know, trying to say I'm doing the wrong thing because I can do whatever I want. So we've got a heavy dose of rebellion ladled all over the top of all of this other rebellious behavior. And I, for one, can start thinking, where do stars like this go wrong? I mean, we've seen it over and over and over that we have these really nice kids that, you know, sometimes even in Miley's case, we'll talk about Jesus, talk about family, talk about their faith. And 5 years later, they're talking about doing cocaine in the bathroom. What on earth is going on here?
Well, and they have to know the risks, Adam. Why don't child stars just learn from the mistakes of those who came before them?
Well, they don't seem to do a very good job with that. And actually, former child actress Mara Wilson, who you might remember starred as a kid in Mrs. Doubtfire and Matilda
and Miracle on 34th
Miracle
Street,
on 34th yeah. Street back in the 90s, she recently wrote a really interesting article called Seven Reasons Child Stars Go Crazy. And you know, she points out one obvious reason when she says years of adulation and money and things quickly become normal. So they get acclimated to sort of this lifestyle that's anything but normal. But then I really appreciated this other thing she had to say. She said, having to live up to your fan base is a little like having to deal with a million strict parents who don't actually love you. And she goes on to say, you know, teenagers act out under normal circumstances, and why wouldn't a teenager act out with that kind of pressure on them? And obviously that doesn't excuse the kind of choices that Miley's making, but I think this was an article that helped me understand the psychology of that just a little bit better.
Yeah, Adam, I think those are great points, and I love the blog that you wrote last week, actually.
Thanks,
it was called When Young Stars Go Off the Rails, on exactly that same subject. So anybody who wants to read a little bit more about the subject, I think that's a great
and comment
place to
on
go.
It,
yeah,
bet.
Absolutely, absolutely. As we talk about these kids getting off onto a right or wrong sort of footing in life, one of the things that we've always sort of encouraged is screen time, you know, limiting your kids' screen time, which is becoming a greater and greater issue, I think, for kids today. And yet, there's been a new study in Northwestern University that found that 80% of homes, children's media is not really a source of conflict for parents. They don't feel like it's any big deal. 55% say that they're not too concerned or not at all concerned about the amount of time that kids are spending with screens, which to me is really interesting considering how many different screens we have in front of us pretty much all the time.
And don't the other statistics we're seeing indicate that screen time is going up?
Right. And I think that there's two things that are at work here. I think because screens are so ubiquitous, it really is so hard to sort of throttle back that screen time, that it becomes almost sort of this losing fight for a lot of parents, you know, this losing battle. But at the same time, I think the parents sort of grew up with more screens than, mm-hmm. say, our parents did. Mm. And so because of that, they interact with it a little bit differently.
Yeah, or maybe don't see it as possibly as big an evil as our previous generation.
Exactly, exactly. And I think that for a lot of families, in some ways, that screen time can be a bonding experience, you know, over a favorite movie or TV show or what have you.
Well, you know, you raised this point about it being bonding. There was a quote by one of the researchers. She referred to it as a family affair, mm-hmm. which raised a question in my mind, Paul. Does that mean that families are bonding over screen time, or that they're really just all equally immersed in it but going off in their own separate direction?
It's a really good question, and I don't think that it was really addressed in this particular study.
Okay.
I think you have it really both ways. You know, I know that in our family, we do watch some favorite old-time movies in our place, but I think a lot of families, they have their own separate iPhones, they have their iPads, mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff, and it does tend to separate families as well.
Okay, thanks, guys. Look for stories like these in Plugged In's weekly Culture Clips report, delivered to you every Monday when you subscribe to the free Plugged In e-newsletter. Sign up at PluggedIn.com.
Welcome to Google. This will not be your average internship.
We're looking at some sort of mental hunger games against a bunch of genius kids for just like a handful of jobs.
You know the expression, that salesman's so good he could sell ice cubes to Eskimos. Well, what would happen if that middle-aged huckster lost his job and had to sell himself in today's tough high-tech economy? We get some idea in the new comedy, The Internship. Adam, what's going on here?
Well, what we have going on here is Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson playing a slightly different, but not very much different, iteration of the kind of characters they like to play. One of them's a blowhard who talks all the time, and the other's kind of a goofball. And they hatch this idea after getting laid off from their job as watch salesmen, because obviously in the smartphone age, nobody wears watches anymore, that maybe they could get a summer internship at Google. And as unlikely as that premise seems, these two 40-something guys land with all the college kids for the summer at Google's headquarters.
And even though they know nothing about debugging code or creating apps, they figure, hey, if you're going to start fresh, you might as well start fresh at Google.
That's right. And, you know, it's sort of painful, almost in a Three Stooges or Laurel and Hardy sense, how much they don't know. I mean, they go to a library and use the webcam on the library computer to do a video interview, and that tells us everything we need to know about how technologically inept these guys are. But despite that, this is a movie that shows that they end up having a little bit of positive influence. The interns are divided up into teams, and the teams self-select, and well, big surprise, nobody wants two 40-year-old guys who don't know anything about technology. And so they kind of end up on the reject team. And the reject team members don't really like each other and don't like them. And they're certainly the outcasts at first. But by the end of the movie, they really have sort of become extraordinarily unlikely mentors. And the movie shows that they have some people skills that none of these kids who grew up with too much screen time actually have. So in that sense, the movie tries to be sort of a feel-good, teamwork, revenge of the nerds kind of film, but as we'll see, it's got some other problems.
Well, one of the challenges posed to each of these teams was to develop a new app. During a brainstorming session, Billy, that's Vince Vaughn's character, comes mm-hmm. up with a fresh idea, at least to him.
All right, guys, I don't want to kill the momentum or the mojo that you have cooking, but to be fair with you, needles and categories, they don't use apps. People use apps. So I have an idea. Nowadays, people are taking pictures, right? They have their phones now. They're out. Something catches their eye. They want to take it. But then the photo's just sitting there. What if they take that photo and instantaneously put it out there on the line and they share it with their friends?
That's Instagram. It already exists. It's one of the most popular apps in the world. Facebook bought them for like $1 billion.
Oh, no. Mine is very different than that.
How is yours something very different than that?
Because on mine, you're taking the photo instantaneously. You're putting the photo out there on the line.
Is it online?
Yeah, I'm putting my photos out on the line and I'm creating an exchange.
Yeah, that's Instagram.
But mine's more of a social sharing on the line that's happening.
Online.
Quick interjection. When you keep saying on the line, you do mean online.
Stuart, you don't do that to a man. He's got a $1 million idea right here.
$1 billion idea.
Even better, let him flow.
Okay, that's all fine, but he's talking about something already invented.
Does anyone really say on the line instead of on? I mean, if he were 80 years old, it'd be cute. But I had a hard time believing a guy in his early 40s could be so clueless.
Yeah, it's really vintage Vince Vaughn. He plays these characters. And we're not ever really supposed to believe that Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson could actually get these jobs. So it's really a two-hour situation comedy with these fish out of water learning how to survive in a new and difficult environment for them.
Adam, the last time Vaughn and Wilson teamed up, they had a huge hit. That was back in 2005 when Wedding Crashers grossed over $200 million and really sparked a whole new wave of raunchy R-rated comedies. Personally, I was surprised that this movie didn't shoot for that same fan base, but aimed for a PG-13 instead.
Yeah, and I wondered, with the whole Google thing being something that everybody can probably relate to, they thought, here's an opportunity to go a little bit wider. But don't let the PG-13 rating in this case deceive you. I mean, this thing has to just barely slide under the R-rated wire. I mean, we've got some really, really crude sexual stuff visually and verbally. And if you want more details, you can check out our review. We've got a lot of profanity in. And so you get done and it's like, despite the movie's attempt to have a feel-good message, I ended up just feeling kind of dirty. I felt like I had been assaulted and that this thing got really about as close to an R rating as it could without going there.
Well, I saw an interview online with the director who said basically he's created it so that it can be released as an R-rated version too.
Yep.
But there's one whole scene in a strip club where the guys take the kids out there, and we say kids, I mean they're early 20s
at best. It's not even clear that they're of legal drinking age.
And, you know, getting drunk, lap dances, I mean it just really does get awful. But it sounds like there will be another version, either R-rated, unrated, however they want to release it on DVD, where it is going to go all the way.
Yeah, and obviously the director said that they intended that from the very beginning, so they want to have their cake and eat it too. They want the broadest possible audience now, and the broadest possible audience when it comes out on DVD.
Okay, one more question, and it has to do with the company at the center of all this. A number of critics said that the movie is essentially a two-hour commercial for Google, and what a coup that was. Would you agree, and if so, what do you think this says about Google?
Well, it does feel like a two-hour commercial for Google. One critic called it a love letter to Google. I mean, this is like the workers' paradise. You've got slides and planes and free food and free coffee. And
we thought Pixar was cool, right?
Exactly. You know, sleep pods. And so really, Google is presented as a company, I think, just about as positively as it could be. And I walked out, you know, asking myself the question, man, how much did Google have to pay them to do this commercial? And supposedly they didn't pay them anything. But, I mean, it really is product placement from start to finish.
And even if Google happens to be your web browser of choice, the internship is not a product that we would endorse.
That's right.
All right. For more specifics about The Internship, The Purge, or other films currently in theaters, you'll find reviews on our website, PluggedIn.com.
For the entire Goodwin estate, you are hereby directed to play one game of Trivial Pursuit.
In 1992, Henry required 4 stitches after Chloe threw what book in his head?
All the questions are about us.
Let the Goodwin Games begin!
In the latest sitcom from the creators of How I Met Your Mother, a rich man dies and his 3 grown children, with issues of their own, must come together and compete for a $23 million inheritance. So, Paul, who are the Goodwins, and are there games worth playing?
Yeah, you know, you really set that up well, I think. The show is about this very dysfunctional family, essentially. The father of this family, Benjamin Goodwin, has died. He left an unexpected windfall for his children, who left home. You get the sensation that their childhoods weren't particularly pleasant. There was a lot of friction within the family. They left home, say good riddance to everything in Granby, this little town in which they grew up.
New Hampshire.
New Hampshire, exactly. And then when their father dies, they're brought back for the reading of the will. And during the reading, they discover that their father had this huge fortune that he will only give his kids if they compete in a number of games. And the idea of the games isn't to prove who's most worthy or who's the strongest or fastest or most beautiful. It's all about bringing the family together. Benjamin Goodwin understands that he wasn't a very good father necessarily. Hmm. And so sort of posthumously, he wants to actually bring some unity to this very fractured family.
And there's a wild card, and there's somebody they don't even know is also competing for this money.
I hate it when the extra brother shows up.
Yeah.
Well, he's not a brother.
Oh, okay.
And essentially what happens, he is sort of this stranger who comes in, and in the pilot, he is just given just automatically this $1 million and he goes and he takes it. And so he just shows up every once in a while in the framework of the show. It's pretty hilarious.
Well, I watched several episodes myself, and I'll be honest, I did not like these siblings much at first. They all had this sort of abrasive Seinfeldian self-centeredness about them. Mm-hmm. But after a few episodes, they started to endear themselves a little bit more, especially the daughter, Chloe, who is an aspiring actress, not terribly successful, you know, flew back in from L.A. and has all the trappings of that. She apparently, when she was living in this small town, was a mean girl and mm-hmm. had made a lot of enemies. Didn't realize the negative impact she had and the way that they perceived her until she comes back. But I like the fact that she genuinely wanted to make amends. She mm-hmm. has, her character over several episodes seemed to soften a bit. And I like that about it. There's some very nice sentiment at the end of each show and statements about the role of family.
Yeah.
Now, that said, there's also a lot of cynicism leading up to those payoffs, and the language and the sexual dialogue were real deal breakers for me.
Yeah, it's a mixed bag. And I wanted to just jump off of something that you said earlier about Chloe. The thing that we can really take away positive from this show is that it really is sort of this story of mutual redemption. You have these very flawed children, essentially, who are learning to grow up sort of on this show. You mentioned Chloe. Henry, the older brother, is this surgeon. He's extremely successful in his line of work, extraordinarily efficient, and yet you see in him that he has a lot of problems. He drinks. He avoids issues. He still can't really deal with the fact that his father died, and you see that he's trying to avoid that in any way possible. Then you have the younger brother, Jimmy, who we learn has been in prison several times.
He's kind of a goofball.
He's kind of a goofball. He doesn't really know what to do with his life. And so you have these very flawed characters who, as you say, deal with life in not a way that we at Plugged In would endorse. And yet a lot of their problems are intended to sort of illustrate how they grow as the episodes season progresses.
Well, it looks like Fox has committed to 6 episodes. How does the whole summer thing work, Paul? If a show gets viewers, will it come back this fall or maybe later as a mid-season replacement?
Yeah, there's always a possibility. And I think that that's what they're shooting for this show. It is very rare that a show that premieres during the summer gets picked up. But you have your Northern Exposure, which was a summer replacement series.
Really?
You have, yeah. You have a few shows, some success stories within that realm that go on to long multi-season runs. I don't know whether this particular show, The Good Wing Games, has the oomph to really make it for multiple seasons, because it seems like the Goodwin games, the games themselves, you'd think they would have to come to an end. And in some ways, when you look at a show like this, there are some problematic elements. You have the language, you have the sexuality. In some ways, it's a mixed bag, and I have mixed feelings whether I'd like to see it continue.
I agree. Thanks, Paul.
You bet.
Well, as Paul explained, The Goodwin Games is about a father with regrets who tries to repair his family after he's gone. Ideally, we should take every opportunity to course correct while we're still here. Each day being a gift from God, it's a chance to start fresh, no matter how badly we've blown it. Well, for the next couple minutes, I want to revisit a conversation we had a while back with the Christian hip-hop duo Group One Crew. Now, we haven't aired this part before, but with Father's Day coming up on Sunday, well, this seemed like the perfect time to share Blanca Callahan's poignant memories of her own father, who passed away shortly before we were in the studio together. It began with a painful past.
My father left my life when I was about 6 years old. He was really into just the bad scene, drugs, alcohol, everything, you name it. And so finally, you know, he went his own way and left me and my mom and my brother when I was about 6 years old. And it created just a lot of insecurities in me, you know, not having a strong father figure and someone to kind of guide me through life and show me what, you know, protect me, all those different things. And so that was pretty rough for me. But he ended up coming back into my life when I was a teenager, and me not knowing, he had given his life to the Lord. So he had his own encounter with God that was very real to him, and he wanted to come back to find his family and apologize for everything he had caused us over the last few years, because it would be to the point where we didn't know if he was alive. You know, we would call our grandma, have you seen him, you know, have you talked to him?
Yeah.
And so it was just a huge coming together and kind of forgiveness and just reforming our relationship that we didn't have for so many years. And he said, I have one request. If I could just take my kids to church, you know I haven't really been there, but if I could bring them to church with me on Sundays, I could start building a relationship. So I started going, and God just started doing something within me and hearing his story and his testimony. So finally I ended up giving my life to the Lord at 17 through my father and his story.
Yeah, and you knew he was serious because he was involved in the drug culture, actually went back into those areas that he'd been and was witnessing to the people that he was involved with before.
It's a beautiful thing. Like, it was really hard, you know, to lose my father, but it was amazing at his funeral to see thousands of people come together, drug addicts, alcoholics, the mayor of Puerto Rico, you know, he was from Puerto Rico, family and friends, and he had just impacted so many people because he went back to where he was living on the streets as a drug addict. Everyone in that town knew who he was, and he opened a church right there in the middle of that town and just made a huge impact in a lot of those people's lives that needed it.
What an amazing redemption story. One that also demonstrates the faithfulness of our Heavenly Father. So dads, happy Father's Day. Whatever your testimony looks like, we salute you and hope you have a great Sunday. Now, if you're not a dad, take time to thank one. In fact, I want to thank a couple right here in the studio, Paul Lacey, Adam Holtz, and our engineer, Dave Salkeld. And in just a minute, we're going to hear Blanca Callahan again as we excerpt a song from Group One Crew's latest album, Fearless. We'll be playing a portion of the track, He Said. And by the way, if you're interested in the rest of our interview with Group One Crew, you can hear that in podcast number 168.
You've been listening to the official Plugged In podcast,
sponsored today by Cedarville University.
Looking ahead, you don't need X-ray vision to get a revealing look inside the new Superman reboot, Man of Steel. That'll be our top priority next time, because it's not just entertainment.
The official Plugged In podcast is a production of PluggedIn.com and Focus on the Family.
So your life feels like it don't make sense, and you think to yourself, I'm a good person. So why do these things keep happening? Why you gotta deal with them? You may be knocked down now, but don't forget what he said. He said,
I won't give you more than you can take, and I might let you bend, but I won't let you break, and no, oh, I'll never ever let you go. Oh, don't you forget what he said.
Forget what he said. He said,
who you are ain't what you're going through,
yeah.
So don't let it get the best of you, 'cause God knows.